and welcome to the Facility Executive Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends and strategies in facility design, operation, and maintenance. I'm your host, Jennifer Getz, the Editorial Director of Facility Executive, and today I'm joined by Tim Poskin, the Director of ISSA Consulting Division. ISSA is the leading trade association for the cleaning industry. Tim is an accomplished and highly respected subject matter expert in planning, developing, and implementing operational strategies and business process engineering efforts in the cleaning industry. With over 25 years of functional and consulting experience in higher education, manufacturing, food service, entertainment, health services, federal government, and privately owned industries. Tim, thanks for joining me here today.
Well, thanks for having me, Jen.
Of course. So together we'll be discussing cleaning for institutional and commercial facilities. So to start off, Tim, I'm really curious about some of the unique challenges that institutional facilities face when it comes to cleanliness.
Well, institutions, when we're talking about what that is, you know, that's really looking at higher education, K through 12 schools, government, which is, you know, mostly typically serviced by in-house service providers, in-house staff. And the biggest challenge that you look at in institutions is that it's really multi-use space. And each of these spaces require a different type of cleaning. You know, one example in higher education, as you think about a university, is there's a residence life aspect where students, they live, they sleep. There's an academic space component where they learn. There's an athletic component where, you know, they exercise, they attend, they cheer, they root. And there's, you know, there's a food service component where they eat, get sustenance for their daily life. And all these different space types serve a different purpose. And unfortunately, they all have different cleaning needs. They all have different soil types. You know, in K through 12 in an institution, think about the many little hands that run around these buildings all day long in a very high use, high density capacity. You know, a lot of touching, a lot of fingerprints, a lot of things going on. And then compared to commercial, you know, an office building, a retail location, you know, these are typically serviced by outsourced staff, you know, and that cleaning environment is typically competitive. You know, it's a business. It's the way the company operates. It's what they do. They're a cleaning company and likely is budget driven and really has the highest of expectations. You know, it has to look good. It has to feel good. You know, it's just, there's definitely different pieces between that institution and those commercial facilities.
And now, on the other hand, what would you say for those commercial facilities? What do you think are some of their biggest challenges?
Yeah, I'm going to say that today, especially, it's transparency is a big factor that's affecting occupants of commercial space. As we had the global pandemic and many people went to work from home, now it's the coaxing people back to the office to convince them that, you know, the commercial built environment is safe to be in. And just that total transparency of the cleaning function, it's being completed and what that entails.
That's very interesting. I was just at a trade show recently, and that was a big topic of conversation, that it's not just about we're ensuring that we're implementing these cleaning procedures, but that we can also promote them and that people entering our buildings feel safe and that they know what's being done to keep spaces safe and healthy.
Yeah, that visual component is key. You know, you want to see it and then feel it. You know, the feeling of clean is something as well.
Absolutely. And how would you describe that kind of feeling of clean and how, you know, in your advice, how commercial and institutional facilities can really get that message across?
Actually seeing the cleaning worker is a big shift compared to pre-pandemic, where most cleaning workers were hidden away at night in a building and they performed their function and you just trusted that that's where they were doing what they did. Today, you see a lot more people actually physically cleaning. And it translates, you know, your mind connects with somebody just wiped that door handle. You know, somebody just wiped that desk. And that's a big piece of it. And then the feeling really is, you know, to use a, you know, scientific word, topophilia is the sense of, you know, being in the right place. And it's hard to capture, but it's different for many people. You know, some people feel its sense of place in the middle of a shopping mall. That feels good to them, normal. And they feel relaxed, and others feel that same feeling at home or at a sports event. And the goal for this clean feeling, is to capture that in a commercial building or in a K-12 building or in higher ed. It's just not easy to do. There's many factors that they all feed to that feeling.
Some innovations that I've seen that have been like what you were talking about is actually seeing people clean or putting up signs, or I think in terms of more if you think about like an indoor air quality, so not so much actual cleaning, but keeping spaces very healthy, having actual monitors in rooms so that people can see the indoor air quality level of a space. So have you seen any kind of innovations that you think have really helped support these facilities trying to just kind of promote their efforts for cleaning for health?
We surely have. It's been a huge technological leap in the cleaning industry, is actually being able to measure what you can't see through air monitoring devices that live in the space where the occupants are. The devices are located in the HVAC, and they capture real-time pollutants that pass through, which could be anything from pollen to off-gassing to when the cleaning staff are actually cleaning. Sometimes there's a spike in airborne pollutants that happens that these devices capture. It's again incredible to watch the technology with the dashboards that you can see by space type and how every space is truly being impacted by those things that you really don't want in the building.
Of course. And that kind of brings me to just when I think about people and when they're cleaning at what time, have you seen any schedules or systems in institutional facilities that have really proven to be efficient and effective at keeping spaces very clean? Do you have any examples that come to mind?
So scheduling is one of the most important components of a true cleaning program. You know, if you don't have scheduling dialed in, no matter how well you're doing the others, we see people struggle. And, you know, the best system we've seen that we've been using for 25 years now is based on 7 different components that make up a cleaning program. And they start with assessment, which is really just determining the baseline of where you are. You know, that's the first part of the system. And when we look at that assessment, you know, we're talking about cleaning, it has to have a focus on the people, you know, the cleaning worker that are actually performing the work. Because if they're not following what the program is, you're not going to get the outcomes you want. That initial assessment also focuses on logistics, on how things are set up. Mm-hmm. And then it looks at cleaning outcomes, things like what are you leaving behind after you clean? What's on the surface before you clean? ATP monitoring that gives a scientific number that says what's left. So, you know, that first part of that system all starts with where do you stand today? And then the scheduling really focuses on workloading and supply. And that, you know, that workloading tells people where they are, where they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to be doing it, when they're supposed to be doing it, and what they're supposed to be doing it with, which sounds really simple. But, you know, typically as we move through in higher education space, this doesn't align. You know, if you ask 99 out of 100 cleaning workers, do you know where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing it with? They're likely doing something different. It's a priority at that minute or time. So just truly identifying all those workload and supply pieces is the second best part of the system. And then quickly to just list the other components, the training of the cleaning workers has to be specific to the tool they're using. You know, the cleaning industry is rampant with, here's the video that I showed you. It's based on this tool. But when you get into the building, there's a totally different tool that you're expected to close the gap with, which is really hard for cleaning workers to do, especially if there's an enormous amount of overload of things in the building. And then this year, it's been a lot of startup support to support directors, associate vice presidents who are trying to make a change in their system. They want to make a change, Jen. They need to make a change. You know, it's not going well, but they just can't figure it out, and they're outnumbered. You know, there's 500 cleaning workers, 50 supervisors, 2 associate directors, and the directors trying to figure out how to turn this ship. And really, the biggest component of that system is having somebody help you who's been there before, somebody who's led an organization that looks like yours, who's made these changes. It can really improve the culture of the people, which is all about some of our questions later in the webinar, is just truly understanding what's on point with having people, staffing, and those other pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the questions I had for you is, cleaning staff obviously are so critical to just managing how clean a building really is. But all this talk about labor shortages and managing, you know, how has cleaning staff been impacted? Would you say that have labor shortages impacted the cleaning industry, would you say?
Oh, for sure. The cleaning industry was, you know, double walloped in that when, you know, a lot of people went home during the pandemic and worked from home, the built environment still had a critical component that was cleaning. You know, there was still cleaning that needed to be done to guarantee that anybody who was coming in and out of the building was still protected. So cleaning is essential. And with the cleaning industry the way it is today, it's also a low wage paying job, which sometimes makes it less appealing to potential cleaning workers. So yeah, hiring and onboarding is a struggle right now for anybody who's managing or directing a cleaning organization. And then when you layer in the fact that, you know, there's a safety concern that with COVID being unknown at the time on how it was being transmitted early on, just engaging in that function was kind of a little scary that, you know, I'm going to get low pay and have to, can't work from home, and yet I still need to go in and expose myself potentially to this. These were all factors, I think, that really drove the labor shortage. And, you know, if you weren't talking about staffing or labor shortage and how you could solve it in the last year and a half, some people really weren't listening. It was the number one at point of mind, and it was the number one issue.
Yeah. So in your experience, what do you think are some of the ways that companies and buildings are really trying to combat some of these labor shortages and encourage more cleaning staff to come back to help out?
Yeah, it is truly culture-based right now. The clientele we work with that are doing really well with this, they use words like empower. We empower our staff to feel safe at work, to want to come to work. We have, you know, they ask regular questions on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being, no, I don't want to, and 5 being, oh my gosh, yes, how much did you want to come to work today? 1s, that's a big concern. You know, if we're getting, no, I really didn't want to come to work today, we're losing good people. And, you know, in this labor market, you don't want to lose anybody, let alone some of your best team players. They ask questions like, do you feel like you contribute to the mission, vision, and values of the university or of the facility? You know, do you understand why you're here and what role you play? And again, if it's 1s, it's like, wait a minute, we need to do a better job of communicating to the cleaning workers why they're essential and why they're valuable to be here. And that's what makes them come to work, you know, after whistling in the shower in the morning, very happy to do it. And, you know, it's a struggle to find the right people and then keep the people. But when you do this, the turnover thing, it just gets less and less. And we're finally seeing the turn here in 2023, where as we ask the question, you know, are you struggling to keep people? You know, some of our best clientele are saying, no, we're actually doing really well. And then there's a cost to that turnover. You know, every time you churn through somebody, there's a financial cost, there's a quality cost, and gaps and errors and all kinds of things that could happen to the cleaning outcomes.
That's huge that it seems like the tide is turning and that more people aren't experiencing some of those same challenges, because cleaning is still so top of mind for so many, for everybody that goes into buildings. As I mentioned, indoor air quality, but just going in and actually seeing how clean a space is still so critical. I mean, after coming off of COVID and then this winter, we've experienced, you know, kind of a tridemic situation with RSV and the flu. So cleanliness is still very top of mind. And one other question I have is, what are some of the main cleanliness complaints industrial and commercial facilities, you know, really might encounter, and how can they address them?
Most complaints that we see coming in are for dirty surfaces, dirty desks, things that just have truly either been not cleaned or increased in soil. They're just not clean. And in those categories, number one continues to be restrooms. You know, restrooms are the number one common source of complaints. They can become dirty and unsanitary, and it could happen quickly. It doesn't have to necessarily be that it's been months since it's been cleaned. It could be that it was clean this morning, but it's noon right now, and today it is not clean. So yep. Restrooms are typically number one. Lack of attention to detail is something that also pops up. Organizations can become really good at doing what we call the daily tasks. You know, they empty trash really well. They spot clean really well. But really, that attention to detail, when you really take a minute and look at a space and you look at the cracks and the crevices and the vents and the ledges and all those little detail things, you know, the chair rail, the things that just aren't typical daily tasks, these are where complaints are really starting to pop up as well. And if you have time to look at it, it makes you question if all these other areas are soiled or are being missed, what else is being overlooked or missed? And then lastly, poor communication with the cleaning staff always seems to lead to some sort of communication breakdown between the staff, between the management, and those complaints come back. You know, I've asked 30 times to have my desk wiped, or my office has been skipped and nobody's gotten back to me. You know, all these little pieces of concerns lead back to uncertainty on, you know, the whole program. And at some point, the world feels like it's collapsing because there's no toilet paper in the stall. But those are the typical concerns that we see coming out of facilities.
No, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I was going to talk to you about is just the fact that so many messes can just happen in an instant. So what are some strategies facilities can put in place to make sure that messes are cleaned up in a timely manner?
Yeah, the most important for when a mess is going to happen is you just typically don't know that a mess is going to happen. Unless you're prepared for it, you're not going to handle it correctly. And there's a whole program, there's a plan of things. The key components are you need to have the right tools and supplies that are available so the cleaning staff can actually go quickly clean up a mess when it happens. You know, if you're looking for supplies after a mess has happened, and you have to go to five different closets to find a mop, a broom, some cloths, an extractor, or any other tools that you need, it's already too late. You know, you're hoping to get a wet floor sign down quickly to prevent any safety issues, but having everything ready is definitely the number one component on understanding how to respond. And then training cleaning workers on spill response. You know, different spills require different response. You know, a dry spill is going to be swept. But a wet, you know, coffee spill, is that going to be a mop and a bucket? And then the process of emptying the bucket, making sure you're ready for the next one, actually making sure that they understand all the things that are required to clean up the spill. And then having staff in the building feel empowered to let you know that there's a mess is, you know, they're doing our job for us at that point. They're calling in, they're emailing, they're letting us know, hey, there's a unbelievable mess in the lobby, in the stairwell, in the hall. Could you have somebody come over there right now and take care of it? Yeah, that's huge. That way we're not putting cleaning schedules in place that have people roaming around the building constantly looking for spills when we've empowered the staff to let us know that they're there.
That's perfect too. That's kind of what I had thought about too. If, you know, you need staff around all the time to just monitor for messes, but I feel like there's a lot of the communication is really strong, then it can be taken care of pretty immediately. I was just reading about how in hospitals, there are buttons you can press if there's a mess or something like that, where kind of an immediate attention can be given to a particular area.
Yeah. And it's just, and with today's technology, it doesn't have to be a written piece of paper or necessarily even an email. Yeah. There's just so much technology right now that you can scan a QR code to give instant feedback. I mean, it's just exciting to be part of the cleaning industry right now.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you most excited about being in the cleaning industry right now?
Me personally, being the director of ISSA's consulting division, me and my team, we love a puzzle. You know, most organizations that contact us to help them, they're either doing so well that they want to be even better, which is fun for us to help, you know, get them where they want to be plus more, or they're in so much trouble, they just can't figure out a way out of it. And for us, that's a new puzzle to help them unlock. And it really serves everybody who's in the built environment. You know, we know occupants want to feel safe. We know that occupants want to see safe, understand what products and processes are being used. And the cleaning industry has been nebulous before, in the past, you know, on what this looked like and being able to document and show it. So the things that get me all jazzed up is truly just being there on the ground within an organization and understanding where they are today and drawing up the plan on where they need to go and working through it step by step. And then in the end, celebrating. It's not an easy feat. It's just changing a custodial organization. It takes bold strength and character. And so it's one of my favorite things about the cleaning industry. And the people in the cleaning industry are fantastic, considering that the job sometimes isn't the best possible job you'd want to be doing. Some of the messes are, you know, unsightly and just not pleasant to deal with. And frankly, some of the people that treat cleaning workers the way they do aren't quite as nice as you'd want them to be. But I don't think you'll meet a better group of people than the people that work in the cleaning industry. You know, my family's in the cleaning industry. We have been just about our entire professional career. You know, my wife's a director of a large university's cleaning department. My daughter's a consultant in the cleaning industry. You know, I work for ISSA, and we just love spending time in it and working with the people.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. There is so much to talk about with cleaning, and there really couldn't be a better time post-pandemic to focus on this area. One other question that I had was, what are some of the differences when it comes to cleaning private and public facilities?
Yeah, it's all about space use. Public facilities really open to the public. When you start thinking about the use and the hours is a big component of public. Public means there's people, and there's people sometimes first shift, second shift, 24/7. K-12 schools, for a great example, where it used to be open for 8 hours, you know, now they're open morning and evening. There's events, there's weekends. University, totally 24/7 is a public venue. You know, they're trying to squish every little event into the space to get their return on investment, whether it be summer camps, you know, all these things that people just want to use the space and they're allowing it. You know, that public component just drives this new soil level where it used to be 1x. Now sometimes it could be 3x, 5x, 10x as much use or soil. And, you know, private's still private. You know, you think of the commercial office space, which today is even less utilized, 9 to 5, 7:30 to 5, whatever the hours are that in office is, at some point somebody's locking that building down. And cleaning workers typically have a big window of opportunity to come in and reset the tolerance of that building and make it look just like you wanted it and just like it needs to be for the next day. And then with people working from home, there's even less occupancy still today in those private facilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else that when it comes to cleaning an institutional or commercial facility that you think, you know, we haven't touched on that is really important you think to mention?
There's a level, you know, having done this for as long as I have, there's a level of things that need to be considered as you're looking at cleaning. Even though they don't feel like they're cleaning, they're still important. Identifying stakeholders. As you go into understand the cleaning, identifying who the stakeholders are, whether it be public or private or institutional, is key. It's different. K-12, it's parents, it's students, it's the principal, it's the school board. Those, you know, just different stakeholders. In higher education, you know, again, it's the parents, but now it's teenage students, staff, faculty, contributors, donors. You know, just understand the stakeholders and the cleaning program. Being an advocate for cleaning is huge. This is the, you know, I think why part of the reason we started the Rethink campaign and Rethink What Clean Means is somebody's got to advocate for cleaning. Somebody has to say this is important. The people are important. It's not hard. It's not well paid. It's a hard job. And just rethink what you think cleaning looks like, because likely that's not exactly what it looks like today.
Awesome. And when you talk about rethinking what cleaning looks like, what do you think cleaning might look like in the next, say, like 5 years from now?
Yeah, it's crazy time. So this is the cleaning industry races into the future technology of what tools are available, and how we measure outcomes. Robotics has really had a slow adoption compared to what I think it can be. And it's not what everybody envisioned, to date myself, on the Jetsons. It wasn't a robot that ran around and cleaned the entire building, but it's more cobotting, where a person, a cleaning worker, and a robot exist together. I have to start the robot. The robot can't call the elevator, so I have to help the robot go up a floor, and I still have to clean the robot. That integration of those two things, physical labor and robotics, it's key. The next 5 years, it's going to make us more efficient. They do the same job every time. No absenteeism. It's not something to replace. It's something to enhance and potentially lower budgets. I think that's a big part of where the cleaning industry is going. And I don't see the upfront of cleaning being center stage going away anytime soon. There were some rough years where budget demanded and drove cleaning into the ground. It was less frequent, less cleaning, less care. And now the center stage that the pandemic's brought, I think this is where cleaning lives for the next 5 years.
Wow. Well, that's super exciting to see. And yes, I'm excited to see what the next couple of years have in store for cleaning. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This has been great. Happy to share.
Of course. And a special thank you to ISSA for sponsoring this episode. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Facility Executive Podcast.